Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Simply Amazing. I'm Tim Ryder from the Apple. Not how any of us wanted the weekend to kind of shake out. The Mets had 3 of 4 against the last place Pirates in their hands and just, couldn't get the job done. Luis Rojas tried to get 5 outs out of Edwin Diaz, which I'm fine with that move. I really am. But, it's surprising. It's surprising. It flies under the radar how, and it's funny because they don't score any runs. They're actually scoring less runs per game than the Mets are. But this is a Pirates lineup that has, I think, 5 regulars coming into the series with 100 weighted runs created plus or higher. So, 5 above average hitters. A little surprising that they have the record and the production levels that they do. But, we saw, guys like Adam Frazier, guys like Brian Reynolds. They're going to beat you. They're professional hitters. Whether they're still in Pittsburgh at the end of the month, that's another question altogether. But, the Mets had, they had the opportunity to close out the first half on a really, really high note. And, that would have been nice. But there's certainly nothing to get your heads down about. You performed like absolute wizards over the first half. Losing, I believe it's 26 players to the injured list over the first half of the season. That's including spring training, I believe, too. That's a mountain to get over, and this team has got over it. They're heading into the All-Star break, 4 games up in the division, I believe. That's big time resiliency. That's big time grit right there, and that falls on the, as I've said it plenty of times here in the past, that falls on the leadership in Luis Rojas. That falls on the, I've been speaking the praises of Jeremy Hefner and Jeremy Accardo and Ricky Meinhold and the rest of the pitching staff and the analytics staff that's getting these guys the right information to put them in spots to succeed. But, from the coaching staff to the veterans down to the players themselves. And sure, the offense hasn't really performed up to the level that the pitching has, but, plenty of time for to turn that around. And, we'll talk a little bit in the second half about looking back on what actually happened in the first half and how guys performed and how groups performed. But, coming into this weekend, you really wanted to see the Mets naturally, foot to the gas and really, start cruising. I don't think taking 4 from the Pirates was out of the question leading into the weekend. And, you had rain out Friday, so that whatever little momentum they had going heading into the series was kind of watered down. Guys are picking it up offensively, and that's, that's certainly a plus. And it was still fleeting through the weekend. You saw it, I think I said it on Sunday, for the Mets to really hit that next level, they'll need this offense to kind of turn from a lethal in spurts kind of offense to being consistently dangerous. They have the players to do so, and adding another player wouldn't hurt. we heard a lot about Josh Donaldson last week. It's an option. It wouldn't be the direction I'd go. We do hear now that the Cubs are beginning their fire sale. So if Chris Bryant is indeed available and the price isn't too steep, if we're talking to the Cubs, you might as well discuss a starting pitcher. I like Kyle Hendricks, and I'm getting off topic, but Kyle Hendricks started off the season really rough. I believe over his first 5 starts, he allowed 10 home runs. Over his last 13, I believe he has an ERA of like 2.70. Doing all he can to get back on track. And I believe he's got a little over $40 million left on his deal over 3 years, which that's palatable. I could deal with that. If you're putting up numbers like that and you're only coming in to be a number 4, number 5 guy, sure. Yeah, that's something I think the Mets could work with. But whether the Cubs are going to be dealing away a reasonably affordable veteran pitcher, it's to be determined. You do have to assume that, as we said, Chris Bryant will be available. You have to wonder whether Craig Kimbrell is going to be available, and the Mets could certainly use another viable arm in the bullpen. And the bullpen's been great, but we're starting to see kind of dents in the armor and the inconsistencies of a season, which is normal for a bullpen, kind of, you know, come into play. And I think Trevor May let up his first earned run in his last, I think he came into Saturday, 10 appearances in a row without an earned run, and a big home run on Saturday, and kind of put things out of reach in game one. Which nobody thought the Mets were going to come back and win game two because they've been so bad in second games of doubleheaders this season. But, you know, coming out and really shaking off the game one loss was certainly encouraging. And, you know, Sunday they come out firing, 5 runs in the first. Francisco Lindor, who's really just been picking it up tremendously. I believe he's 9-for-28 in July after at the – I'm sorry. No. 10-for-32. Nope, I got it wrong again. 11-for-32 in July after his pop-out to end the game on Sunday. 11-for-32, 2 homers, only 7 strikeouts. I believe it was 43 or 44 plate appearances. You know, that's going to that's more like the Francisco Lindor we've been waiting for. Michael Conforto finally broke out. Finally, he had a 2-hit game his first game back, and since then he had scored. I have it right here, sorry. I'm sorry. So he had a 2-hit game on his first game back on June 23rd, went 3-for-42 after that. That was heading into today. Very, very big 3-run home run in the first. Needed that. You saw the level of excitement in the Mets dugout when it went out. You saw Conforto. I think he threw up the chirp twice, once coming around second and then once coming around third. He was visibly pumped up, and I think everyone was pretty pumped up for him, especially this guy here, because I wrote a story at the Apple this week saying that Michael Conforto will be fine. Again, this is in the middle of his 3-for-almost-50 stretch. I was defending Scooter's honor all week. Of course, there's no defending a tough stretch, but I just kind of wanted everyone to see that, you know, coming back from a 5-week layoff, not everyone is Brandon Nimmo, where you just pick up a bat, jump right in. You saw it with Jeff McNeil, too, and I spoke about this, I believe we talked about it on Friday on the pod a little bit, too, and now it's kind of coming to fruition, so we're talking about it again. Jeff McNeil and Michael Conforto, both of them, they've been hitting the ball very hard. Both hard hit percentages well above their career averages, but both were really struggling at the plate. And now you hit, you could look at McNeil over the last, I believe, since the calendar turned to July, he's really turned it on. I wrote about that Sunday morning, actually, over at the Apple. Coming into Sunday, he was at 357, 419, 393. Only picked up his first extra base hit since he's been back on Saturday, but, you know, he's hitting balls hard. Now they're starting to find the grass, and that's, you know, certainly a good thing. We saw last week how important Brandon Nimmo is to just the Mets offense just kind of rolling along and performing like the machine that they were built to perform as. You saw the benefits of Pete Alonso starting to hit tank home runs over the last week, and, you know, everything sort of comes together, and the more that the Mets bring healthy players back, and the quicker, well, you can't say the quicker they settle in, but, as they start to settle in and find their timing, as we're seeing now with McNeil, as we're seeing now with Conforto, it's going to make all that difference because it alleviates the stress off everyone else in the lineup to that need to perform. Now everyone can just go to work and swing the bat and only worry. I believe Rojas said it about McNeil after game two on Saturday. He's only going up there and thinking about hitting, looking for his pitch and putting the bat on the ball. I'm paraphrasing, but still, it's right where you want to see these guys. And, you know, I think that harping on the slumps that we saw, and of course they were very, very prolonged slumps for both Conforto and McNeil. And this could even apply to Francisco Lindor, who had just an atrocious first, I guess you could say, couple of months, but he's looked like Francisco Lindor over the last 6 weeks. And now, you know, into July, he's really starting to look like Francisco Lindor, and it's exciting. I think everyone's kind of primed for a very exciting second half. You saw Dom Smith come around over the last few weeks. I believe he came into Sunday. His weighted runs created plus in July was 176 or something to that effect. And, you know, it just again, you can look 1 through 8. You can even look at James McCann, who's been offensively, I think, certainly more than I expected. You know, a lot of folks didn't believe, I guess thought that his high productive year at the plate was a mirage. I believe that was 2019. It took a dip in 2020. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but, you know, I think everyone was more kind of looking forward to McCann's glove and game calling, which has been terrific. I like his game calling. I don't think his framing metrics are as glowing as advertised yet, but, you know, taking especially fielding metrics into account, not counting ones, I should say, I guess the fluctuating ones, I guess, well, they're all kind of fluctuating. I'm talking out of my ass, but, you know, taking a half season of metrics, especially in such a specific matter, a specific kind of area that framing is in, I'd give that time to kind of even out. But it certainly, you know, Tomas Nito is the defensive-minded catcher, and he's been hitting well. He's been hitting very well with runners in scoring position. But, you know, James McCann has turned into the offensive catcher, and if he's going to produce, it's perfectly fine. But, you know, you just kind of have to wait for the whole puzzle to come together. And, you know, you could even look on the pitching staff side. And, you know, the starting pitching has been terrific. And after the top three, you know, you've had a lot of guys in flux. And, you know, Tylor McGill had a very, very nice outing again on Saturday. He's been terrific. His 26 strikeouts over his first four outings is the most, tied for the most in franchise history. And, you know, that's the pleasant surprises that kind of keep things going. The Mets certainly needed it. After Sunday, I don't believe we're going to be seeing Jared Eichhoff much anymore. You know, and he pitched well. I think he had two shutout innings before he got touched up in his third inning of work, which kind of led to everything else crumbling. But it wasn't to end his inning. Was that the fifth? Maybe it was the fourth. Anyway, somebody was a little dribbler or a bunt in front of the plate. And he had absolutely no business throwing to first. If that ball gets away, you know, it changes the dynamic of the game a lot earlier than the dynamic of the game changed. But you know, that's not a major leaguer type play. That's a little league, a junior high school mistake is letting that ball go to first. You just don't throw it. And, you know, I think his last time up before he got DFA'd, then brought back on, he let up 5 home runs. You know, I just, you know, great. Thank you for your contributions. But, you know, with what's happening right now, as a team, the Mets can't take that chance to have some pitcher who's, all due respect, of course, not all that great, you know, putting the outcome of the game at question because he wants to send one to first on a play that the guy's already 50 feet up the line. It just doesn't make any sense. But, you know, mental lapses happen. But for a guy who is fringe at best, I wouldn't expect to see him cut loose. You know, the Mets will have Carrasco back. The Mets, hopefully, Syndergaard was thrown from, I think, 90 feet this weekend. That's a great sign. You got to hope once he ramps it up, there's no more setbacks. And certainly let him take all the time he needs as long as he's back before postseason rosters are set. I'm happy. I'm totally fine with that. You kind of saw the bullpen at its worst on Sunday. I think Miguel Castro coming in, he had a very real nice first inning of work. Came in, got the job done, and ran into trouble his second inning. And I think for a guy who was who has been struggling, leaning on him for 2 innings in that spot might not be smart, especially when, as we saw, Drew Smith was available. It just doesn't make much sense. That, of course, brought Edwin Diaz into the game early. Things crumbled from there. The Mets made some waves in the ninth, but I think Guillorme led off with a single. Nimmo grounded into a double play, and Lindor popped out. But, you know, there's always areas to improve on, and there's going to be games like this. There's going to be down stretches where, oh my, you know, you're going to hear from every Mets fan from here to the deli to the bagel store to the CVS that, oh, the sky's falling, this team sucks. You know, Lindor's going to go 0 for 15, and he's going to be the worst player on the planet again. Michael Conforto's going to go 0 for 20, and he's just, you know, trade him away, DFA, and we're going to hear, you know, there's going to be, this is how this fan base gets. And that's a good thing, because we're very, very passionate. That's never a bad thing. I guess, you know, after a very long time, and I can't even say it's for everybody, because you can see 60, 70, 80-year-old Mets fans, well, of course, they haven't been Mets fans for 80 years, but since their inception, who still, you know, look at a bad stretch, oh, this team sucks. And, you know, that's just kind of ingrained in us by now. But it shows our passion. It shows that we care about this team. And, you know, it's, over the years, they've become part of our lives. It's just how it is. We care deeply about how this team does. We care deeply about the players. It's just being a Mets fan. It is what it is. I guess I have an easier time separating myself from getting too high or too low. I can stay even keeled. I have my moments. Today, Sunday, I should say, because you're listening to this on Monday, but when Eichhoff threw that ball away, I was fuming. I don't get mad about baseball games. I was fuming. I don't want to harp on Jared Eichhoff, but it's a mistake that you can't make. You know, the potential for disaster. And we saw a disaster by the end of the day anyway. But, you can't make mistakes like that. What else from Sunday? Hey, the Futures game. We have the All-Star game, of course, this week, which we'll talk about on Friday when we come back. We're also, if everything works out, we're hoping to have Steven and Roberto Correa, my buddy Ray. We call them both. I'm sorry, buddy. I slip up. They're going to be back to discuss which direction the Mets went regarding the draft, which, of course, starts Sunday night, and that'll tie in, I believe, through Tuesday. It's 20 rounds. I'm not sure how long that's going to take. It could be done by Monday. I don't know. As you heard on the last episode, I'm not super informed on the draft. But Steven certainly got me hyped up on Ty Madden, pitcher from Texas. I think I got that right. My apologies again, guys. You heard last episode get cut off with our infamous LIRR train stop bell. I got cut off on our recording and we lost. It was a solid 45 minutes. So on Thursday, you guys are going to be getting a full episode with Ray and Steven, and we're going to have some fun. But back to Sunday, just a couple more things we wanted to touch on. The Futures game, you had Brett Beatty and Francisco Alvarez. Brett Beatty, by the way, who'll be promoted to Double-A Binghamton after Sunday's Futures game, after absolutely tearing up High-A Brooklyn. I don't have his numbers in front of me. I should, but I don't. Just ripping it up. Strikeouts were going to be a potential Achilles heel for Brett Beatty. I believe he's dropped his strikeout percentages from rookie ball. I think he struck out 30% of the time in rookie ball. I believe he's down to 26% in high A. That's an extremely encouraging step forward, in my opinion. Let's see if he can carry that over into Binghamton. You know, Double A, as we've heard, probably has the highest level of pitching, I guess. We're going to have to get Jacob back here. He knows more about these things than I do. But, taking this leap after not a whole bunch of experience at the lower levels, it's going to be a decent litmus test. And I wouldn't be shocked if Beatty maybe, you know, is vulnerable his early days in the league. Because, again, Double-A pitching is different than high A, or before this year, he would have been in, you know, you can't even consider what high A is right now because everything is just a little mishmashed. But, I'm not overly concerned that he'll fall into bad habits. I just think that it might take a little adjustment time, but he's going to be good. We heard from J.J. Cooper of Baseball America on Sunday, back to my point, that Brett Beatty and Alvarez showed some of the more impressive power in the National League's batting practice session. I believe he said that Alvarez's raw power was the most impressive out of the group, which if you've seen the rosters for the Futures game, that is a very impressive minor league roster. Beatty, he said, had the most consistent power. I believe he put out 5 in a row at one point during, and again, it's batting practice, but still, this is a spot, the Futures game alone is a spot for guys to make names for themselves, but the media coverage at something like batting practice, it, you know, it certainly puts a little steam behind a guy like Brett Beatty, who, you know, Mets fans knew about him last year. That's about it. Now everyone's starting to take notice. I believe he's still top 10 in the minors in weighted runs created. Plus, Francisco Alvarez is way up there as well. I believe he was fourth last time I checked. So, again, the Mets have, you know, studs down there. Whether, you know, I can't see Alvarez going anywhere, but, you know, Beatty's certainly making a case to stick around as well. But with the trading deadline coming up, we might see some names being floated. I know I said it on Twitter this week that, if it was up to me, I think I would keep, if the decision was this, I would keep Ronnie Mauricio over a Brett Beatty in a potential deal. God knows what that deal is, just in a potential deal if I had to pick. Just because I think Ronnie Mauricio, and I know the numbers aren't there, but you have to keep in mind he's been playing an average. Matt Brown's team was talking about this last week on the show. He's been playing an average of, I think, 3 years below his, playing against guys who are an average 3 years older than him, I should say. So, I think he's coming along fine. I think in spring training we saw exactly what his tools are, what he can do. Whether, you know, the organization feels the same way. I just think that as a potential major league impact player, I kind of think Mauricio might have the edge as a higher ceiling. But again, I'm not a prospect expert, and this is just one person's opinion, so it means nothing. I would like to see another bat brought in, possibly. I know we talked a little bit about Bryant, but even just kind of shoring up some weak spots. But Bryant really does feel like a perfect fit. For an expiring deal, let's say if Bryant is the hypothetical target. Boy, I'm getting way off tangent. I haven't even taken a break yet. Sorry, guys. So let's say if Bryant is hypothetically available, you know, are you going to part with a Ronnie Mauricio for what could amount to be a rental? I think the Mets would have a very good shot at re-signing him, or extending him, I should say, or even just, you know, bringing him back into the fold, however they want to approach it. But is that gamble worth it for sending off a high-risk prospect? Would a high-risk prospect even be necessary? You know, I know a lot of people like Mark Vientos, and Mark Vientos is a really good prospect. He's starting to show his power quotient, his versatility. They're trying to move him around the diamond, I believe. You know, whether he fits in the organization's future plans, which could also be said about Mauricio because he's got Lindor ahead of him, but the same way that they're kind of moving around Vientos, I would be moving around Mauricio. If I'm repeating myself from the last show, I'm sorry, guys. We just recorded a few days ago. My apologies. But, you know, the Mets have decisions to make. And, you know, it's going to make waves. You don't want to mortgage away the future for a rental. But the carrot is being dangled. And if Chris Bryant gets closer to getting that carrot, you know, it's a gamble. It's a risk you might have to take. We're going to take a very quick break, hear from the sponsors, hang tight. We're going to come back and just, I guess, you know, wax optimistic about the first half and look forward to the second half. Hang tight.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
And welcome back, everybody. As promised, we're going to do a quick recap of the first half. Not a recap, we're just going to kind of talk about some high points, some low points, some encouraging numbers, what have you, and kind of look ahead to the second half, see what's going to be most important moving forward. So, you know, naturally, the first thing we're all going to look back on the first half is of course, the Mets pitching staff, which has been tremendous. I mean, the Mets, after Sunday, I believe, have trotted out 15 starting pitchers in the first half. Now, and that's of course including, I believe it's 5 openers now. But that's not what anybody expected. You could look at the 1-3, like we said in the first half of the show. Jacob DeGrom has been just historically good. He's literally chasing history, doing things, at least on the pitching side, that we've never seen before. It's very funny that Shohei Ohtani across the country is doing things just in general that we've never seen before. But Jacob DeGrom's having absolutely a magical, special season. He finished the first half with a 1.08 ERA, a 4.8 wins above replacement via Fangraphs, but 4.8 F-WAR leads all major leaguers combined, and that's just blows you away that he comes out every 5 days and he's leading all major leaguers in wins above replacement. Just mind blowing. Taijuan Walker, who of course was named to the National League All-Star Game, All-Star team this weekend, will be attending the game in Colorado. Hopefully, getting in there. You certainly like to see him get in there. I know he just pitched on Saturday, so we'll have to see. But he finished out the first half with a 2.50 ERA, 3 walks per 9 on the nose, only let up a little more than a half a home run per 9 innings, 0.60. Behind him, he had Marcus Stroman, 2.74 ERA. His walks per 9 were well below Walker's, 2.28. Also with a less than a home run per 9, 0.91. Stroman, I believe, is 5th in the majors in ground ball percentage. He came into, I believe, Sunday, was 52%. And I believe that probably would have stuck. You had so much production from these top three guys, but it doesn't really end. Didn't really end there. Joey Lucchese found his way and really contributed some very, very strong starts that, kept this team afloat when they really, really needed it. David Peterson, talk about coming into his own. This is a guy who was thrown into the fire in 2020 after a handful of double-A starts. That's it. And, really just every time he went out, you saw his confidence building. Before the season, you guys heard it here from me. I had questions regarding Peterson being ready to adjust with major league hitters. Because now they have a book on him, and now it was a lot to put on the shoulders of a young pitcher who hadn't had a lot of experience in the high levels. And, he worked beautifully, and injuries took him down. He has the oblique strain. I believe he was throwing this weekend. Still, you don't want to rush him back, but that's encouraging. Tylor McGill, we talked about him in the first half. He's been a guy who stepped up and been terrific. Hopefully maybe a Robert Stock can come in and provide a lift. Hopefully Jeremy Hefner and them can really, get the most out of him. But, you're 1-3 with McGill in a bullpen day. It might have to be the way right now. And, the bullpen day is kind of a conundrum in itself. Aaron Loop, who's been terrific this season, I believe he's now at a 1.61 ERA, gave you 2 shutout innings to start the game on Sunday. They gave him a 5-run lead. It fell apart, but the positives can't be lost here. Edwin Diaz, again, taking Sunday out of the equation, He's been outstanding in non-save situations, which he should not be in anymore. Not so much. But in save situations, I believe entering Sunday, it was like a 0.90 ERA. Still hasn't allowed a home run this season. Neither has Aaron Loop. You know, these are things that you hang your hat on and you keep on moving forward. There's going to be bad days at the office. If anybody can tell you that, Edwin Diaz can tell you that. But, you know, you bounce back, you keep on moving. You know, Jerry's familiar. He's been up and down, but he still enters the second half with a 3.24 ERA. That's something that you can really say, hey, you know, maybe you got to use him in the right spots, but, you know, this is a foundational guy. Seth Lugo, he's had a 2.65 ERA since he's come back. You know, this is one of the best relievers in the game over the last 3 years. This is someone that you want to, you know, that you should be happy to have around. And I think if he can give you multiple innings a few times a week, that's it's absolutely huge. But, hey, don't push it. I know that they took the Lugo rules away now that he's got the bone chips removed. But, you know, you kind of have to tread lightly. Once he's ready and once he's really snapping off that curveball, and he's looked terrific so far, but you may see him moving up in the pecking order. Trevor May, we talked about him in the first half, started off the season on a tremendous run after a tough outing his first game of the season. Went on a terrific run after that, really, really fell into the doldrums following that, and since then, you know, like I said in the first half, Saturday was his first earned run in 10 appearances. So, you know, there's certainly pillars and columns and support beams to kind of keep this thing together. You know, Miguel Castro, you really have to find a way to use him to his strengths. Again, I know I said it in the first half, Louis Rojas, you know, if you have Drew Smith available, and Drew Smith's been outstanding too. Where's my numbers for Drew Smith? Here we go. 3.22 ERA. This is a guy who came over from Tampa Bay in the Lucas Duda trade so many years ago. And, you know, he's paying dividends. And that, I think that speaks volumes to this regime getting the most out of guys. I know they tried with Drew Smith, and he was right there. Then he got hurt with the elbow. But, you know, especially now to come back and do what he's done and be reliable, you know, that's big. He still has some kinks to work out, but I think he's certainly getting there. Yenzi Diaz, I think we saw, you know, I think he would be a nice development project for the second half. Because, boy, he gets his fastball up there. He gets his secondary pitches where he wants them. You know, if they can get the most out of him come the end of September, and Diaz can be another weapon, even a multiple inning guy out of the pen, you know, that's a plus. Robert Gesellman was having a terrific season before he went down with the torn lat, which you got to hope he comes back. But that's such a, you know, I think they pegged it at 6 to 8 weeks. That's got to be a hopeful target, but we'll see. But I think before he had a couple of bad outings before he actually went to the IL. Before that, he was at like a 2.3 something ERA. He left, you know, he went to the IL at 3.65, but really moving right along, he wasn't walking guys, 2.5 walks per nine. You know, this is the type of steps forward we like to see. Corey Oswalt was really pitching nicely. Hopefully he's coming back off the IL. I think he went on with right knee inflammation. You got to hope that, I guess, comes to pass after the All-Star break. Give everyone a rest. We all need a little break. Boy, speaking of needing a break, and we'll get to the offense in a second, but just wanted to thank all you guys who are listening. All you guys. We fluctuate from week to week, but everyone who takes the time to listen, everyone who takes the time to go on the Apple and read, and, you know, I put up content every day. I don't expect everyone to keep up with it like it's the most important thing in the world, but we're developing a loyal following, and it's a really cool feeling. I just kind of wanted to thank everybody for that. It's been an unreal experience going out on my own. You know, there are certainly battles to fight, and you know, there's a shock to the system of being, you know, on your own through this process. But you know, the waves are being made, progress is being made. It's really exciting, and I hope you guys are enjoying it. And we're going to be incorporating a lot more as we move forward. And yeah, I hope you're all sticking around and having as much fun as I am. But onward. The offense, of course, we talked about the pitching. That has clearly led the way here. The Mets wouldn't be here if not for the pitching, and of course, not for the New York Mets bench mob, who, without a doubt, ends up in Mets lore after what they did just over the first half. Just outstanding guys like, you know, Jose Peraza, who, you know, his numbers on the surface don't look great, but boy, you look into his hitting with men on base, hitting with runners in scoring position, just outstanding stuff, man. Like, you couldn't expect this from anybody. Billy McKinney, how could anybody have expected the levels of production, or I should say the high points that we saw from guys like McKinney, from guys like Patrick Mazika, from Jose Peraza, you know, Luis Guillorme, he's been showing flashes for 2 years. If you're late to the party, that's on you, but everyone's contributing, man. It's, you know, the going these long lengths without your whole team available, you know, not having Conforto and McNeil was huge. Not having Nimmo, as we can see, was huge. You know, J.D. Davis, before he hit the IL, everyone forgets J.D. Davis was hitting like 390 with is that 1.1 OPS? Like, come on, this guy was raking. And, of course, we can't expect him to stay at those levels. But, you know, this is a well-built team. And we saw the peaks and valleys, especially, you know, you look at Lindor, you saw the stretch that he had and the ups and downs since. And now he's really starting to find a groove and boom, the All-Star break hits. So you got to hope guys stay fresh. But, you know, Jonathan Villar has been a godsend. You know, he might have played his way into like a regular rotation role. And I know that Rojas had him somewhat pegged for that going into the season, but he was very much a bench cog. He's in the rotation now. He's going to command starts. Unfortunately, you know, he might be taking playing time away from Luis Guillorme, but, you know, Guillorme's your quintessential bench player. As Guillorme's your quintessential bench player, Brandon Nimmo's your quintessential fire starter, man. He just goes out there. He makes everyone else around him better. He's the Michael Jordan of Mets lineups. Everyone else kind of benefits from having him around. And, you know, the proof's in the pudding. Over the last 3 years, we've kind of seen that. He gets on base, he comes around, he scores. And it, like I was saying a few weeks ago, as you get regulars back in the lineup, it's going to change opposing pitchers' approaches. Now we're kind of starting to see that effect take place. You know, you can't battle everyone with curveballs because Brandon Nimmo hits curveballs. And, you know, there's still going to be guys falling for this, but that's where the hitting coaches come in and kind of move everybody along and make the adjustments. And, you know, I think I said it a couple of weeks ago, when Kevin Pillar is your fourth outfielder, and of course, you know, his offensive numbers aren't there, but he's one of the Mets who have just absolutely torn the cover off the ball with runners in scoring position. So it all comes out in the wash. But, you know, when Kevin Pillar is your fourth outfielder and your lead bench guy, you know, that's a really, really good situation to be in. If they want to go out and, you know, naturally you're going to have to think they're going to add to the rotation at the trading deadline. Where they might go, who knows? We're going to do a trade deadline show over the next week or two, and I'm sure we're going to address all of these things. But, you know, you kind of have to think about going out and looking for a bat, too. I know we've brought up Chris Bryant twice already, but again, he'd be an ideal fit if the prices match up and if the you know, if the Cubs and the Mets can kind of come together on an agreement that's not too dearly costly for the Mets, you kind of have to make that move, man. A World Series in Queens, oh my goodness, it'd be too much. Yeah, I mean, guys, I could drone on. You've heard me sit here and talk positive about this team literally all season when things were at their absolute worst. Shout out to Shannon. You guys know Miss Met on Twitter. Shout out to Shannon because the positivity coming from that way, it's just, you know, for a long time, a lot of people were all doom and gloom. And you see certain voices come out and the positivity just kind of comes out with it. And it's very refreshing. But back to Shannon. She said it on Sunday about Francisco Lindor. And I don't have it in front of me, so I'm just paraphrasing. So if you couldn't appreciate Francisco Lindor at his worst, You don't deserve him at his best. And that kind of sums up this entire Mets team. I'm sorry, I just dropped my pen. it kind of sums up the whole first half for this Mets team. If you couldn't appreciate them, if you couldn't see the best and stay involved and hope for better days, when things were absolutely at their worst over the last 3 months, and we saw it, and there were multiple points that we said, oh, there's no way they're coming out of this alive. Most of us. never say die. I lost my train of thought. That's how it's been so crazy. They keep on coming back. They're like freaking zombies. They just, it's been exciting. And how you don't build off that and carry that into the second half is just beyond me. I mean, you have all this momentum, and sure, splitting a series with the Pirates is, oh, what's that? And everyone's up in arms. But hey, who cares? It's been a great first half. I don't care. Get over it. Move past it. They all have to move past it. The Mets, of course. They have to move past it. We all got to move past it, too. And, you know, come Monday, it's opening day 2.0. It's great. But, you know, in the second half, you're going to have, we said it before, you have Jake Chase in history. He's going after arguably the most impressive pitcher season for a starting pitcher in MLB history. You know, Pete Alonso's looking like Pete Alonso again. We've seen him put this team on his back in the past. If he's 2019 Pete in the second half, watch out. Same thing goes for Michael Conforto. We saw it on Sunday. The ball's just flying off his bat again. Now it's actually finding gaps and landing over the fence. And, you know, if he's there and if Lindor's there and if Nimmo's still doing his thing and if McNeil's doing his thing and Dom Smith, guys, I could go on. That's six guys right there. I mean, it's if you're a Mets fan and you're not ridiculously excited for the second half, I don't know what to tell you. You've been jaded after a very long, you know, just strenuous, however long it's been, rooting for this team, and you're just jaded. There's so much to be excited about and so much to root for in this team. You know, it's going to be a special second half. I don't want to jinx anything, but I'll put money on it that this team ends up in October in the postseason, and a deep run into October is not out of the question, especially in this National League. The Giants have been terrific. I'm very, very curious to see their lineup up front. You know, I catch them when I can, but I believe the Mets are out there in August. Very interested to see them. We know that the Mets can handle the Padres. We know that they can handle the Cubs. We know they can handle the Brewers. I think they see the Dodgers the same trip they see the Giants, and that's always going to be a hurdle to get over. But, guys, this is that's why this team is so close. If you have a landscape shifting move to make, go out and make it, because that could set you apart from the rest of the National League. And you know, you look towards the American League, and there's some very good teams out there, and you're going to have to battle. But what, the White Sox? What, the Rays? You know, the Rays smoked the Mets when they were in town, but, you know, the Mets were losing. They had just lost a bunch of guys onto the IL. They lost Conforto and McNeil, I believe, in the same series in Tampa Bay. I believe that, I want to say they had one of those games in hand. I don't even remember. As I was saying, it's been a long first half. I put this team in a seven game series with this pitching staff against any team in baseball, and that, you know, that might be blind optimism, but it's not, because I think that they've proven each and every guy in this lineup, if they're on, this is a force, and we're starting to see that effect in full blast, and it's very exciting. But that's where I'm going to go ahead and end it here. I've droned on long enough. I was telling Andrew before I hit record, I thought this was going to be a 25-minute episode, but here we are. Guys, thank you so much again. This has been an outstanding first half. Only magic in the second half. Let's go, Mets, all day. You guys know where to find us. Anywhere you listen to podcasts, subscribe to the Apple. Paid, if you want to become a paid subscriber to the Apple, that's even better. Never will I put up any paywalls. It's always going to be, literally off my fingertips to my keyboard and straight to you guys. I'm never going to put it behind a wall. But if you'd like to contribute, of course, it's always very, very welcome and very, very appreciated. And yeah, I think that's it. Huge thanks to Andrew Claudio, who just continuously does amazing things on the back end of this show. If I had more time, I'd explain, but boy, he's a fucking miracle worker. Anyway, guys, we will talk to you on Friday. Let's go Mets. That's all I got to say. Let's go Mets. Peace.